You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday the 6th of July 2021 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Well, just before we get into the news story for today, I just want to make some commentary on Matt Hancock's resignation in Britain here. Matt Hancock was the health secretary, so he was right at the top of the National Health Service. And he's just resigned. And who have they put in place to replace him? Have they put a top doctor or a top scientist? No, it's Sajid Javid, who has been put in position as the health secretary for the whole of Britain, in charge of the NHS. And what are his qualifications for running the health service? Well, his father was a Pakistani bus driver, as we keep being told by the British media. And I guess the main qualification is that his father was a Pakistani. And that's why he's the new health secretary. That's the qualification that you need. Can you think of a more ridiculous system than liberal democracy, where in some of the most important posts in the land, you can just swap the people around with them having no experience whatsoever of the department that they're now leading? And that is apparently our crowning achievement, this democracy that we export all around the world. And it basically means that you have people in charge that have no idea of what they're actually doing. They're just mouthpieces. They're not actually responsible for policy. They're just chosen for being the people that voice the policy decisions to the public. So who is it that's actually making these policy decisions, I wonder? Anyway, to get into the news story for today, the other day I saw a video, a rather charming video of a British school, primary school children, and they're all singing and dancing, and they're singing a football song. They're singing the Vindaloo song that some of your listeners might remember from a few years back. And it was a very uplifting video, a very happy video. I retweeted it, and I didn't actually know what the music was when I retweeted it. I just liked the pictures. It was lovely to see all these white children smiling and having fun and enjoying being children. And when I retweeted it, I thought, I wonder how long it will be before this gets attacked. This gets attacked for not having enough diversity, because just about every face in it was white. There may have been one face in it that wasn't white. That may have just been a suntan. It was quite quick. It's overwhelmingly white children that are at their school. And I thought at the time, well, how did that get past Ofsted? Surely they must be marked down for having only white pupils, because we know that schools have been marked down for not doing enough to introduce their pupils to diversity and not having enough non-white students there. And it seemed to me that there were no non-white students here at all. And the school was really happy. The children looked deliriously happy. They were having a good time recording a video with the teachers. Just a really happy video to see. And then the next day, it was on BBC Breakfast, and I was amazed. I was thinking, what are BBC doing promoting this hideously white video filled with white faces? I'm shocked to see that the BBC are promoting this. And again, I wondered how long it would be before people started attacking it. And it was later that day that it actually got attacked. A primary school suspended its Twitter profile after their version of a popular football anthem made in support of the Euros 2020 was attacked amidst absurd claims of mindless hooliganism. How can you accuse 5 to 10 year olds of being mindless hooligans? I mean, this was a video that they produced of them all singing a song. It couldn't be further away from hooliganism. Just because it's a football song does not mean that it is promoting hooliganism. Flake Fleet Primary School in Fleetwood, Lancashire, whose pupils once reached the final of Britain's Got Talent, recorded and filmed their own version of Fat Les's chart hit Vindaloo. In keeping with the original, which starred Lily Allen's actor Father Keith, the video shows crowds marching and jostling into people, itself being a pastiche of the Verve's Bittersweet Symphony promo. So this is why they're saying it's hooliganism, because one of the kids sort of marches forward and pushes the other children out of the way. It's all very good-natured. It's not intended to encourage people to be aggressive, is it? It's there to make people smile. But despite it being clearly good-natured fun, Twitter's woke brigade pounced on the harmless footage. One troll branded the innocent children a sea of aggressive white faces, while another called it disgusting behaviour and mindless hooliganism. Think about that. Somebody sees happy, smiling white children, and they don't see happy, smiling white children. They see a sea of aggressive white faces. I mean, what does this tell us? This tells us that the most innocent of white people are going to be accused of being aggressive and are going to be attacked, even when they're doing the most innocent things, the sort of things that would make people smile to see. People on the left hate to see that. They interpret that as aggression. They see it as disgusting behaviour. The fact that there are white children smiling and enjoying themselves offends people. It offends people on the left. They think that it is disgusting and absolutely horrific to see white children enjoying themselves. It led to the school, which promotes its social media on its website, pulling down its Twitter feed, but it later returned at lunchtime. Well, thankfully, I mean, why would they pull down the Twitter feed just because of some horrible people that are attacking it? I do like to see that it's being reported that these people were attacking it are trolls, but I don't see why the people attacking it are called trolls, whereas the people that are attacking whiteness that are in our universities, they don't get called trolls. We get attacked, we get called neo-Nazis, but the people that attack whites in these universities, calling for white people to be abolished, white people to be turned into slaves, they get lionized. So we see a double standard here. I guess because it is so offensive to be attacking small children like this that the male is referring to the people doing it as trolls. Head teacher David McPartlin, unavailable for comment today due to a pupil's trip to Alton Towers, appeared to reference the attacks when he wrote online, "There are times that social media can be amazing and make such brilliant things happen, but it can also be a dark and disturbing place that really makes you question the direction that society is heading." And that's very true. When you have people that are attacking something so innocent and harmless as children making a music video, then you really have to start getting concerned about things. And he should really be concerned about the things that he's being told he has to teach these children. As I say, I'm very surprised that he's allowed to have this school with so many white children in it. When I saw it, I thought, well, it must be a school in a rural area. And these kids that are educated in these rural areas, they are the luckiest children in the country to not have to put up with the sort of things that the children in the multicultural cities have to put up with. The school urged people to send in videos of them marching for the video back on June 29th to show support for the Euros, and contributors were urged to email them into the project, which they had dubbed the Big Vindaloo. Weeks earlier, a different video of them showing their support over the strains of Land of Hope and Glory went viral. My gosh, this patriotism is just too much, isn't it? These neo-Nazi children listening to the Land of Hope and Glory. Weren't they trying to ban the Land of Hope and Glory from the proms a while back? At the time, Mr. McPartlin said things have been a bit serious over the last 12 months because of the COVID lockdowns. In school, we were not able to celebrate Christmas like we usually do, so this was just a chance for us to have a bit of fun and get everyone involved. Again, so it's completely innocent. Let's get the children involved in the football. I mean, they're all covered up in red and white flags. They're all dressed up in the St. George flag, and they had knights there from the Crusades. I mean, it's very patriotic, and it's a very sweet video to see. And I think this is great because it really does highlight the stupidity and the viciousness and the maliciousness of people on the left. And it shows that what they don't like is innocence. What they really can't stand is innocent white children enjoying themselves. He said, "We really did have a lot of fun making this one, and we were able to lend a little bit of support to the England team at the same time. Their Vindaloo version had an even wider reach after it was featured on BBC Breakfast yesterday. The condemnation from some social media users are understood to have been the reason for them taking down their Twitter presence. One person declared, "The school has pulled down its Twitter account and I've left a complaint on its website. It's disgusting behaviour these children are being pressed to participate in by the school. I have a 7-year-old child and I absolutely do not want her to be exposed to this mindless hooliganism." Mindless hooliganism. Children showing their support for their country in the football and recording a harmless music video. This is mindless hooliganism that this mother does not want her 7-year-old child exposed to. Does she not want her 7-year-old child to meet up and see other laughing, happy children interacting with one another? Another exclaimed, "Very depressing. What does it even mean? Poor kids already brainwashed, a sea of aggressive white faces. Is that global Britain? Just check the amazing English team and learn from it." And I think what they're saying there is that they're highlighting there that the school is not multicultural. The school, it was a sea of white faces, happy, innocent white faces. And obviously this person that made this comment, they hated seeing that. They wanted to see a sea of black faces. That's why they said, "Just check the amazing English team. This school should be learning from them. They should be promoting diversity and replacing these white children with black children." Maybe that would make these people happy, but it certainly wouldn't make the primary school happy, I don't think, because a couple of years ago, this primary school was actually awarded the title of the happiest primary school in Britain. Flakefleet School in Fleetwood, Lancashire, won the accolade thanks to the amazing lengths that teachers go to in supporting their pupils. Crowned the winner at the National Happiness Awards, hosted by training organisation Laughology, the school was recognised for putting happiness at the heart of its day-to-day workings. In its nomination, head teacher Dave McPartlin said the school is in a deprived area in Lancashire, where poverty is on the increase. Think about that. What happens in the black areas where poverty is on the increase? We see a massive increase in crime. We see stabbings taking place in the schools. What happens in the deprived area in Lancashire, the white deprived area? Well, the school gets given an award for the happiest primary school in Britain. Could that possibly be because there is no diversity at that school and those white children are amongst their own people, they're amongst their own kind, and that is conducive to happiness? That means that these children will be producing oxytocin in high amounts, which is conducive to being sociable, and you only produce it when you're among your own kind. It's there to provide the bonds that we need in society. It's there to help build communities. That is encouraging them to be happy, I would suggest, is just the fact they are among their own kind, and they will feel safe with teachers there that are of their own kind. We know that children instinctively want to be with their own people, and they instinctively feel on edge when they're with other races, and it's just common sense that they would feel that way. The judges recognised the many steps the school had taken to ensure pupil and staff health and well-being was high. Thanks to the dedication of staff and the sense of community they have built in the last 2 years, the school's reputation has grown and it is now almost full for the first time in over a decade. An awards spokesperson stated, well, I'm very pleased that they actually won an award for being the happiest school, and it's great that they've made this video. It's great that it's really popular, and it's helpful to us as nationalists that people have attacked it, because that really does show you that this is just about attacking white people. It's not about equality. It's not about raising black people up to higher standards. It's just about attacking white people. And when our opponents see innocent white people being happy, it enrages them. It makes them absolutely wild, and they complain about it. And what this does is it wakes up the rest of the country. They look at this. Normal people look at this video and they think it's great. And then they see that these abnormal people on the left are attacking it. And they're more likely to support nationalists when they see nationalists. They're less likely to believe the lies that they're told about us in the newspapers when they see this sort of thing going on. So great to see this video. And it's just a shame that we have people on the left that are so confused that they don't like it. Moving on to the next news story here, and it's a transgender news story. The Church of England's first ever trans woman priest has declared that God is non-binary and questioned whether he is just genuinely like a guy. Well, hang on a minute. Didn't God create man, male, and female? Doesn't that mean that God is binary? Isn't the whole of creation male and female? And don't the male and female fit together to create another male or female? I would suggest that the whole of creation shows us that God is actually binary. He is obviously male, because of course we do get churchmen telling us that God is a female. It's quite obvious that God is a male, and he doesn't need a female. He doesn't need anybody else. God is God. He wouldn't be God if he actually needed anybody else. This reverend here, the Reverend Karen Sarah Jones, currently of the St. John the Baptist Church in Cardiff, Wales, was ordained by the Church of England some two decades ago, telling the Anglican State Church at the time, look, there's this medical history that you need to know about. Now, I don't understand how the church can ordain transsexuals. I don't understand how they can ordain women either, because in the New Testament, it says that women should not be teaching in the church. And in the Old Testament, it says that he who is wounded in the stones cannot be a part of the congregation. And quite clearly, if somebody is a transsexual and they've had the operation, they are wounded in the stones. They cannot be a part of the congregation. So the church is going totally against its own teachings here by actually making this person into a reverend. And what happens once the person is a reverend? They start projecting themselves onto God and claiming that God is non-binary. The cleric told ITV News that they were fine with the disclosure. That's the church were fine with the disclosure. Although, as she put it, they were initially a little bit sort of, oh, okay, we don't really know what to do, but give us some time and we'll work it out. And it did take them time, but they did work it out, and eventually I was ordained, Jones recalled. And I dare say that the reason why they worked it out and why they thought it was okay is because they were worried about equality legislation. They were more worried about equality legislation than for speaking up for the primacy of the church and speaking up for the primacy of church legislation. Canon law, all our common law, comes from the church. The justification for keeping the law comes from the church. It comes from Christianity. How you can then later on make laws to undo the ones that actually gave you your legitimacy in the first place, I don't know. I mean, it is very bizarre that we have laws that contradict other laws, older laws, because when you make a law, you're not supposed to be able to undo it. It's supposed to last for all time. It's a very serious business, lawmaking. And yet we have plenty of laws that nowadays, plenty of statutes that actually contradict older laws. And what is supposed to happen is that when something like that happens, it's supposed to get argued out in court, and you're supposed to come to the correct interpretation of the law. So what the church really should have done here is said, well, I'm afraid we can't ordain you then, because it says here in our holy book that if you are wounded in the stones, you cannot be a part of the congregation. And they should have challenged that in the court to see what the result of it was. And the result of it should have been that the church held primacy, and therefore that the church was correct, and the church should not be expected to go against its own ancient traditions. But they didn't. They didn't have the courage to do that. They just caved in and made this person into a priest. And it's the same with women priests, and it will be the same with gay marriage, no doubt. They refuse to have a backbone and actually challenge these things in the courts. The canon claimed that there have been some occasions where it's been made pretty plain to me that I wouldn't be welcome in a certain post, and that people disagreed that I should even be ordained. But that, for the most part, support has been tremendous, particularly in Wales. And that's because people are not going to be nasty to anyone. They're going to be polite to somebody. But again, what you have to think about here is, what about the congregation? How are the congregation going to feel about having somebody that is flagrantly breaking the Old Testament law then claiming to be teaching that congregation about the Old Testament law and about Christian law? It's effectively saying you should be listening to a hypocrite, isn't it? I mean, if this person actually took Christianity seriously, they would not be trying to get ordained. So that really says that the reason why they joined the church was to subvert it, surely. If they understand that, if they looked into Christianity and they understand that what they're doing is actually against Christianity, and then they try to join the church, that shows that what they're trying to do is subvert the church. So again, the church should have realized this and not allowed them to be ordained. Anglican clergy in Wales have on occasion displayed a marked tendency towards the woke politics of the social justice left, with female bishop Joanna Penberthy recently feeling compelled to delete her personal Twitter account after reports revealed she used it to abuse Brexit and Conservative supporters in vitriolic terms. And again, the church isn't supposed to be political, and yet they are political. What we see the church not sticking to its traditions and its beliefs. We see the church thinking that it is more important to promote modern fads and modern trends. I mean, I've seen the Archbishop of Canterbury reading from the Declaration on Human Rights instead of actually reading from the Bible. I mean, humanism is the opposite of what we're taught in the Bible. We're told in the Bible that rights come from God. Humanism tells us that rights come from the state. On the subject of God being non-binary, similar to claims by the Church of England's senior Archbishop Justin Welby that God is not male nor female in 2018, Reverend Canon Sarah Jones elaborated by suggesting, when you really think about it, does God really have a body? I don't think so. So could God really be he, just genuinely like a guy? Well, God did have a body, didn't he? Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is God. And he had a body. He was exactly the same as any other man. That was the whole point of it. He was exactly the same as any other man. He faced the same temptations, more temptations than any man has ever faced. And he didn't give in to them. That is the whole point. It is possible as a man to not give in to temptation. So yes, God does have a body. Again, this person is just trying to subvert the religion here. He continued, or she continued, I'm sure she would prefer to be referred to as she, I don't think so, and I think if God created everything, God's beyond all of these boundaries, so whatever God is, I really don't think God is a standard he, Jones insisted, adding, I would absolutely say that God is non-binary in the sense that God is neither male nor female, and I think it's helpful. Well, hang on there a minute. How is it that we were taught to pray to God? Isn't the first two words of it our Father, our Father, who art in heaven? Are they trying to say here that that God is transsexual and he's not really a father? He is a female that is pretending to be male? I mean, father, it's not gender neutral, is it? It is specifically male throughout the Bible. God is spoken of in a specifically male way. And you want God to be male. You want God to be protective of his people. You want him to be able to protect his people. Women have less strength than men. If you had a female god, or if you had a goddess there, then she wouldn't have the strength of the male. She wouldn't have the strength of the god, would she? So God has to be male. Continuing here, Jones added, it's not just helpful for the queer community. I think whether you are straight or gay or whatever you are, the fact that God is not unequivocally male perhaps is actually quite helpful in our understanding of humanity. Well, I would argue that no, that's not helpful in understanding humanity whatsoever. What they're trying to do here is appeal to homosexuals. And again, this shows us that these people don't quite think the same as everybody else. How is it going to be helpful in understanding humanity to think of God in terms, not in human terms? I mean, we are human beings. We understand things through our humanity. It has to be related to us in terms that we can understand as human beings. Obviously, God is eternal. He's outside of the mortal realm. But because he created the mortal realm, we can understand what God is like through the world itself and the order, the intricacy, everything that the world is made a part of. And we can understand from that, from the fact that male and female fit together to create children, that the male is the protector, that the male is the larger, and the very fact that God is referred to as Father throughout the Old and the New Testament, we can understand from that that God is male. God is quite clearly not female. And there is no equivalent to God. There is no equal to God. There is no goddess. What they're saying here is completely the opposite of what the Bible actually teaches, and they're just doing it to appease the homosexual community. Such a view may have raised the eyebrows of C.S. Lewis, the Oxbridge Don, author of The Chronicles of Narnia, and the leading Anglican apologist, and one of the leading apologists for all Christian denominations in the 20th century. In his seminal 1948 tract, Priestesses in the Church, the author was clear that Christians think that God himself has taught us how to speak of him. To say that it does not matter is to say either that all the masculine imagery is not inspired, is merely human in origin, or else that, though inspired, it is quite arbitrary and unessential. It is an argument not in favour of Christian priestesses, but against Christianity. And that is the point here. What this transsexual priest is doing is they're trying to subvert Christianity by saying this. They're not trying to help Christianity. If you are breaking the guidelines of a religion, and you insist on breaking those guidelines of that religion, and then you try to become a teacher in that religion, you're not going to teach that what you're doing is wrong, are you? You're going to teach that what you are doing is right, and that is subverting the religion. The heads of the establishment church are the ones that are subverting our churches. Just thankfully, we do still have our original scriptures. They keep trying to do away with them. They keep trying to say they're anti-Semitic and there needs to be anti-Semitic warnings on them. But we do still have our original scriptures, and we can look through them and we can hold to them, and we don't need the church leaders to tell us how to understand them, because they are very clear. Even though they were written thousands of years ago, it's still very easy to understand what is being said. It is very clear what is right and what is wrong and what should be a part of the church and what shouldn't be. Well, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.